The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Yay, podcast night!
This week's Major Spoilers podcast goes out to Kevin Hall, Marco Selmo, and William English, who in 1921 pooled $800 to open their own auto parts store, dubbing it Pep Auto Supplies. And today they're better known as Manny, Mo, and Jack, the Pep Boys. And now you know the rest of the podcast that goes out to them, which this is it today. Waha.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm back.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of reason, it was the edge of 17, it was the week that was, it was a dark and stormy night, it was the middle ground between light and shadow, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the corner of First and Amistad. It is better far to have loved and lost than to have and have not. It is the evening of the day, it is the winter of our discontent, it is the dawn, and Juliet is the sun. It's for the best, it's for the birds, it is what it is the mark of an educated mind, it is Balloon. It is the duty of nations as well as men. It is the journey, not the destination. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. It's all Greek to me. It's a wonderful life. It's only a paper moon. It's nothing but a G thing. It's always sunny in Philadelphia. It's on like Donkey Kong. And most of all, it is on the air.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another issue of the Major Spoilers Podcast, issue 374. Matthew's New Year's resolution lasted 1 week.
I don't make New Year's resolutions.
Yes, at the beginning of the last 2 weeks ago show, episode 372, you said in the open, my resolution this year is to make shorter opens. The end.
This is shorter than the longest one.
Oh, yeah,
ever
definitely,
did.
definitely. Welcome back, Rodrigo.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Matthew, look, Rodrigo's
Wait,
here.
That's Rodrigo.
That is
Rodrigo. I thought it was Rob.
Yes.
People get us them confused.
Yeah, people get us confused all the time. I just... The way that you can tell Rob and me apart is that one of us, you know what, it's just good to be back.
Probably best to leave
it
right there.
Leave it at that.
Well, I'm glad that you're back, Rodrigo, because later on in the show, we're going to be talking about Dark Crystal creation myths. Mm-hmm. And I know that you are a huge Dark Crystal fan. So we're going to be talking about that later in the show. But before we
you
get to that.
Dark Crystal. Steven loves Dark Crystal. That means that all two of us. Wait.
Matthew loves Crystal Pepsi. Mm-hmm. Let's get to some news. Got three items this week that looked interesting or somewhat interesting. Star Wars Underworld. It's the live TV series. Underworld. Marvel announces fan service Avengers versus X-Men versus. That's not a misprint or a mispronunciation.
Versus?
Avengers versus X-Men versus.
Your pocketbook?
And the final one is Axe. Yes, Axe the Body Spray is going to make a comic book. Let's spin that wheel of destiny and see where we land this week. Round and round it goes. There's Star Wars. Oh, George Lucas passes you. There's Marvel with a versus X-Men versus Avengers versus fanboys. Oh! Lands right there on Axe. Axe the Body Spray has come up with this brilliant idea Check this out, Rodrigo. This is a brilliant idea in which they're going to do a comic book, quote-unquote, in real time, and they're going to let the fans decide how the comic book is. That's what they said on their web on this video that they're running. It's called Axe Anarchy, the graphic novel. It's a comic book that's going to be written in real time with input from fans. So people are going to have to go over to the Axe website, and they're going to ask you questions. Basically, the way I looked at this, because it was down to like the final heroine selection or something like that, and really, I think you're going to need heroine in order to understand and appreciate this book.
Be nice.
It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure. What's going to happen next? Is Billy going to go spray the spray, or is he not going to spray the spray? Those kind of questions. Right. So in my mind, I think they already have the whole story plotted out. They're just letting fans choose the adventure. But Axe, getting into the comic book market, Rodrigo, thoughts?
We've seen other private companies that don't normally do comics get into comics, usually it's about delicious spongy cakes at the end of your normal comics.
Thor fighting hillbillies.
I think that I'm just mildly skeeved out by it because of Axe's usual campaigns.
Yes,
involve
spray it on and
spraying
the women
stuff, and then women, crawling all over you. If you watch the video for Axe Anarchy, they have awesome gems that the guys are suggesting, like the hot Asian chick should do this now, and those two should totally make out, and things like that. So I don't know. It doesn't really seem like the audience is going to have that much control over things. And when they do, it'll just mostly be a decision as to which character is making out with which other character.
Thankfully, they've sprayed it on first. The thing that cracks me up, though, Matthew, is this comment about the first comic done in real time. Man, I remember there was old Simpsons gag about back in the day when they used to do animation live. And, oh, man, the artist's wrist went killing them.
First of all, this is not a comic. This the way that I understand it, and I'm not entirely sure how this real-time thing is going to work. Are they not going to be like all online video type stuff?
I don't think like it's a video. It's an actual book that's going to be published.
Okay.
Now, the video that they do show actually has a lot of really good depth 3D animation to it for that motion comic.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well,
that's what I thought we were going to see in the book was the whole, the 3D animation motion comic thing, which is not a comic.
And no, it's a TV
really
show.
Animation.
Well, the hilarious thing about the whole real time thing is that, the stuff they show there is well put together, colored and inked. So it's like I just keep picturing them like showing you a video of a guy drawing a comic and playing the same awesome guitar music that they're playing. Right? And the guy's like penciling this sexy girl and he's shading and he's finishing it up. Passes it to the inker. The inker starts goes back to the artist. Is like, what is this? What is this part? He's like, oh, no, that's the shadow. And they're like, oh, okay, all right. And like 6 hours later, you finally get to the colorist.
Yeah. Comics can't be done in real time because comics are generally a collaboration of at least two people, sometimes as much as 20 people. So, I'll be interested to see it. I think that in the long run, it's going to be probably the equivalent of the Kool-Aid Man comics from when I was in high school. Yeah.
Let me stand behind Axe for just a moment. Is this such a bad thing? Comic books are a popular medium. Yes, not in front of it.
Yeah.
Comic books are a popular medium. There's so many people out there, and I don't know, this, depending on your point of view, this could be a slap in the face to a lot of people because it's like, well, let's pander the nerds who really want sexy ladies and sell our Axe product. But from a couple of weeks ago, we were talking on one of our shows about The Driver, that BMW series with Clive Owen in it, The Drive. That was just a big commercial for BMW, and that's all it was, and nobody complained about that. As you said, no one has chastised Hostess or the Kool-Aid Man for they've done in the past.
I mean, the long, proud tradition of Transformers, of being an awesome cartoon to sell toys, And which leads us to the modern Transformers films, where they literally sign a contract saying, aside from Optimus Prime being a truck, all other cars have to be what, GMC?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ford, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember which one it was.
We're going to create a character to showcase the Volt.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're going to call that character Volt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, is this really a bad thing for Axe to do this?
No.
Or does it just seem that it's...
This is a good thing.
Okay.
Because what it really means is...
Some of the people that read comic books, they need Axe spray.
Well, no. What it really does is it makes comics just another medium for advertising, for translating your mission. Translating your message to people through comics should be no different than a television commercial or a little thing before the movies, which, by the way, I hate it when they have the little thing before the movies. It's just another medium to tell your story, to get your message across. And, you know, it's got a gimmick to it. There's no such thing as a real-time comic. But that doesn't change the fact that, yeah, it's kind of a cool idea. I don't think it's going to be, you know, the single most successful comic book in the history of the universe, but it's not really meant to be. It's meant to be something where people who like comic books and Axe body spray can go, hey, look, it's a comic book about Axe body spray. Ha ha. And the people who really want to have that kind of input can go, yeah, make the hot Asian one kiss the other girl or whatever it is that happens, you know.
Right.
I honestly don't know because I'm allergic to Axe body spray. And
well, if nothing else, even if this thing crashes and burns halfway through the project, I think Axe has achieved its goal in that. Look at all the free advertising they got for less than $5,000.
You wanna hear a story about Axe body spray real quick?
Does it involve women ripping your clothes off and going,
Only afterwards.
Involve a ferret in your hair?
That's what happens after this story. So I was at the store and I think I bought rice and some pomegranate juice and I think like some tortillas and some cheese. And the coupon that came out was a coupon for Axe body spray. And I'm like, what? They have installed the smell sensors in the coupon machines now? Because what I bought has nothing to do with this. So it must have been this thing that was like, oh, yes, you need this.
Maybe it took into account the fact that your food altogether.
Well, that was after I was already done shopping. Oh, okay. So,
well, you go back and shop more than once in your life.
I guess so. Yeah, I have. This was the latest time I have.
Oh, so back in December.
I have my coupon. Yes, back in November. Because I just buy like a giant bag of rice, and that's what I eat for the next 6 months.
Rice and pinto beans. Mm.
Yep.
All right, so there are our thoughts and reactions to the Axe graphic novel coming your way. Look for it, Axe Anarchy. I think they've got a Facebook page.
Again later.
Also, head over to the Major Spoilers website. Let me tell you guys about this. This is something that's going on for the next 30 days exclusively on the MajorSpoilers.com website. So we have had Mark Finn and Matt Sturgis on the show in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Finn, we had him on to talk about Robert E. Howard. Matthew Sturgis has been on a couple times talking about the work that he's doing in for DC. Both times I've questioned the men about Clockwork Storybook. Mm-hmm. In the original Clockwork Storybook, there were four people: Bill Willingham, Matthew Sturgis, Chris Roberson, and Mark Finn. Okay, if you read comic books, especially comics from DC, at least three of those four names should sound very familiar. Bill Willingham on Fables, Matt Sturgis, who's done House of Mystery and Fables and some other things. Chris Roberson, who did Superman, Cross America or whatever it was, the iZombie, he writes that. He's writing the new Mortal, I think is what it is, for IDW, bunch of other stuff. Oh, I think Chris Roberson's also writing, Matthew, the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes crossover for IDW. So those names should be really familiar. Well, New Year's Eve, I don't know how Roberson started this on Twitter, said something about Clockwork Storybook, and I had mentioned, oh, you know, I've got that complete archive. I've downloaded them all before your website went defunct and all that stuff. The four of those guys used to write an online shared universe anthology series. Mm-hmm. And they did it for years, from like 99 through about 2008, something like that. On and off, really from 99 to about 2005. And it was wonderful. Great reading, great fantasy. You'd love the stuff, Rodrigo.
Mm-hmm.
If you read Willingham's Fables now, a lot of the stuff that was in Clockwork Storybook in the Sansibola city, some of that stuff you can see transition into some of their other works. And so Roberson made some comment about, I wish there was an archive of this. I said, well, if you guys want me to, I'll post all the stuff that I have. And Roberson started talking with Willingham and Sturgis and everybody else. And, you know, eventually there were like 10 writers involved in Clockwork Storybook. And they were like, well, wait a minute. We might want to republish some of that stuff. Send it all to us. And then another couple of days pass, and then Bill Willingham contacts me directly and says, hey, we're going to start this 30-day writing challenge. And back in the day, they used to push themselves to see how much they could write in 30 days. They would try to do a whole novel in 30 days. And this was before the national write a novel.
NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, NaNoWriMo, whatever it is.
NaNoWriMo.
And I was
he
like,
was the leader of a Super Sentai team back in the 80s, I believe. NaNoWriMo. Beagle One.
And they said, well, we're bringing this back. We're getting the whole gang back together. We're going to write novels in a month, and we want Major Spoilers to have the exclusive on this.
Nice.
So right now, I know if you go up to the Major Spoilers website and you click on that Clockwork Storybook icon for the 30-day challenge, and you look at that, it looks like Mark Finn is the only one writing stuff.
Uh-huh.
But everybody, there's a bunch of stuff that we can't publish that's behind-the-scenes stuff, because ideally these guys are going to actually publish this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next 30 days, you're going to see excerpts, you're going to see more interviews, you're going to see you know, some name calling and some smack talk that's going on behind all these writers. This is kind of a cool thing because you've got some big names. Mark and Draco. Matthew, does that name ring a bell to you? I think that's how you say his name.
Mark, and wasn't he one of the Slytherins?
Yes, that's it. He's one of the Slytherins.
Oh, Mark and Draco from Manhunter.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
This contest has Mark and Draco, Mark Finn, Dave Justice, who's done House of Mystery and some stuff
I love his league.
Daryl Gregory, Matthew Sturgis, as I mentioned, Bill Williams, Sean E. Williams, and Bill Willingham. Those are the ones that are doing this right now. So what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 80% of the original TikTok storybook people are doing this right now, and it's going up on the website. Now, Chris Roberson's not taking part in this. He and I have had a conversation. We might get him on the show in the near future. Definitely going to have some interviews with him and some other things. Keep checking this out. This is really fascinating to see how is a novel being played out. Now, Mark Finn has been posting chapters for his book called One in a Million. It's the third book in a Condorcs trilogy, which are some characters from the Clockwork Storybook universe. Great reading. These are happening just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be something every day on the Major Spoilers website. I really encourage you guys to check this stuff out. And here's the thing. Willingham, Sturgis, Roberson, Finn, and Draco, Justice, all these guys are checking out the comment section, waiting for you guys to ask questions in their comment posts. So use it. You can ask Bill Willingham anything, and he'll probably give you a definite answer.
Mm-hmm.
So take this opportunity over the next 30 days. Well, I mean, obviously, if you're going to ask some weird, weird question, he probably won't respond, although he might. These guys are pretty good at the jabs and barbs at one another. Check it out. I think this is fascinating. I feel honored that Major Spoilers gets to be the kind of clearinghouse for this. This is kind of like almost a dream for me because, you know, when it got into shared fantasy worlds, and really what is the basis for me of understanding how Dungeons & Dragons really work before mm-hmm. World of Warcraft, Clockwork Storybook is what it's all about.
Oh, absolutely.
I just got an email today that we can start sharing portions of the old Clockwork Storybook tales. So you're going to see some of the archives appear. It's going to be wonderful. I am super excited about this. I hope you guys are too. Head over to majorspoilers.com. There on the right side, you'll see the Clockwork Storybook 30-day event. Click on it. You'll see all the archive material for Clockwork Storybook. I hope you guys enjoy that. Rodrigo, do you remember that time that Lois Lane turned into a black woman? A proud black woman?
The time she turned into a proud black woman? No, I don't remember that one.
Well, our good friend Matthew here, uh-huh. not to be confused with Matthew Sturgis, but Matthew Peterson has a retro review this past week.
Retro review.
That looks at Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane.
Lois Lane, number 106.
Where she magically transforms into a black woman and experiences things from the other side.
Oh, it's not magic. It's Kryptonian science, baby. Science!
It's magic. So go over to Major Spoilers, check that out under Retro Reviews. Top 5. Everybody loved when Rodrigo did his top 10 cartoon opens.
Intros, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we grabbed that. We stole it for top mm-hmm. 5 while you were on vacation. So now, the top 5 cartoon theme songs. You can find that over at iTunes or there on the Major Spoilers website. And of course, if you are looking to support Critical Hit, And that season's rapidly coming to a close if you haven't heard Critical Hit. Critical Hit t-shirts still available, going out weekly. If you haven't gotten yours, keep checking the mail. Ask your postman. We've got everything out to date. Maybe one or two that came in today.
Say, please, hey, please, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
And make sure if you've got a question about your t-shirt orders that you contact me directly and don't just randomly throw up a complaint with PayPal. My product never arrived. Well, you only ordered it 3 weeks ago. It says allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. So Come on, please check with us. Please check with us because more than likely it is out and on the way to you right now. But Critical Hit t-shirts, official logo. We got some more great stuff. I was doing some stuff over the holiday break, Rodrigo, while you were away in Ohio. Oh my gosh, it's going to be awesome.
Oh yeah.
I can't let anybody know, but.
You don't even know. People don't even know.
People's minds are going to be blown, especially when they find out who we're working with on this.
Oh yeah.
Or at least my mind was blown when this person contacted us. So.
Is it anything else?
It's Batman. Yes, Batman is working with us. Okay. If there is nothing else, there are more stories over at majorspoilers.com. Thank you, everybody, for your support. When we come back, it will be time for reviews.
Reviews.
How to get a Major Spoilers shout out. If you want to get a personalized shout out at the top of the show, all you have to do is the following steps. Number one, visit majorspoilers.com. Two, click on the Make a Donation button. Three, donate $10 or more to the cause. Four, sit back and relax and hear Matthew butcher your name and say something cute about you. Major Spoilers, bringing the good stuff since 2006.
Thank you, everyone who's donated to the cause. We really appreciate this. This is this kind of stuff that helps us stay afloat. We put out, what, over 100 hours of original content per year for you guys. That's more than any cable channel does. That's more than, I don't know, who else doesn't puts out more than 100 original content hours a year. It's and we're doing it because we enjoy doing it. And if this is something that was worth your time, even though that Kirkman debacle is still pretty ripe in many people's noses, throw us a couple bucks.
Doctor Who, we would not have reached this until the third Doctor's era. You realize
that?
Yeah,
look at that. Nice. And we're right now only on our second Rodrigo right now.
That's right. I haven't even regenerated.
Actually, you've been the first Rodrigo. This Matthew is the second Brian.
Yes.
Yes. But if this show's been worth your time, throw us a couple bucks. We really appreciate it. Somebody just said, "Hey, I don't want to attach my bank account to my PayPal, so here's a flat amount of money. Enjoy it." And it was, you know, a little bit more than what it would cost to contribute $2 a month for a year. So
nice.
We thank those people who are doing that. All right. We're just super excited this week to have Rodrigo back. I'm jazzed on soda this week for some reason. Let's get to some reviews.
Mm-hmm. Woo.
Reviews.
Matthew's on cold medicine. Oh, Matthew, or let's see. Rodrigo, you've been gone a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
How was the vacation in Ohio? Give us a vacation review.
I have a nephew who is 5 years old and a nephew who is 3 years old.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
So that is basically what most of my vacation involved was interacting with two tiny chillins.
So it's kind of like having Rob and Brian around.
A little bit, except that...
Probably superior communication skills.
Except that these two kids I'm not allowed to hit, whereas Brian and Rob I just wail on.
True. And when Rob wets his pants, you know, you just have him change himself.
Right.
Whereas with a three-year-old, you know.
Right. I got to experience some pop culture stuff that I wouldn't have normally. For example, they're way into this show called Pocoyo.
Pocoyo, yo, 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 yo?
Yeah.
Yo, 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 yo?
No, just Pocoyo? One yo.
What's a Pocoyo?
Okay. A Pocoyo is it's a show, and it's a South American show, but it's been translated into English as well. And it stars a little, I think, three-year-old kid named Pocoyo, and he hangs out with a duck and an elephant. And they live in a blank world where sometimes there is stuff for them to interact with, but mostly it's just blank. It's pretty cool.
It's like an alien holding tank.
Kind of, yeah. It's like it looks like a sensory deprivation like wall kind of thing.
and the aliens are torturing him and giving him an elephant.
They have colorful blocks to play with and stuff. But the thing that I really like is, you know, one of Pocoyo's friends is this duck, and Pocoyo does crazy things, like he will spin on his head a lot, and the elephant does, you know, like
dances
around.
Is this a Sprout Network
like
show?
No, I don't know if it airs on Sprout or not, but the duck is extremely malleable, like on regular occasions to communicate.
So he's a rubber duck?
Sort of. They will, like, first off, if he's ever upset about something, his beak goes to the other side of his head. Like, it's out in front, and then, like, it'll just, like, spin to the back. And regularly, they, like, grab him, and they're like, oh, what's an airplane like? So the elephant will just grab him and, like, spin his beak like it's a propeller and, like, stick out his legs and, like, have him, like, fly around like a plane. It's, like, it's really weird, and I really like it. Because it's like this duck is just like a tube with a beak and two legs and some eyeballs.
He looks like, what was that duck animation show?
Duckman?
Yes, Duckman.
He
kind of looks like
that. He is kind of reminiscent of Duckman. Yes.
I am on the Pocoyo website, and the first thing that you can click on is, what is Pocoyo?
which makes sense because it's difficult to explain. My parents tried to explain to me what Pocoyo was before, and I was like, what? But it's fun. Yeah. And the English version, the narrator, who's the person that speaks the most, is voiced by Stephen Fry.
Ah.
So there's some pedigree right there.
And, you know, in English, the name is actually Small Yo.
Right.
Little which bit is nice. Yo.
Little bit me.
So that's how you spent your vacation? How I spent my Christmas vacation? With Pocoyo.
Yeah, there was some of that. We watched some Ben 10 Alien Force.
Oh,
we
awesome.
Watched, what else? Space Jam, the youngest, loves Space Jam so much. He thinks that movie is super great. I was actually there for his birthday, and he had a basketball-themed birthday because he likes Space Jam
that's cool.
so much.
Yeah, so did you get to play Michael Jordan since you were the tallest one?
Yeah, I taught him how to dunk like Michael Jordan, which is first we had to like lower the basketball hoop, and then I taught him to like stick out his arms, stick out his tongue, and then like spread his legs out while he's jumping.
And did you all sing the Seal song as the birthday song?
No, but anytime that you sort of reference any song that's in Space Jam, he gets really excited.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, and that's like, there's like Steve Miller songs in Space Jam, you know? So it's like, any random song will excite him because Space Jam actually has a really random soundtrack.
That sounds fascinating, Rodrigo.
It was crazy times.
3 weeks of that.
Yep.
I you've got a great relationship with your family, I can tell, because your Facebook was all lit up with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I probably couldn't deal with that for 3 weeks with my family.
My nephews are really, really hilarious. The little tiny one is getting to that age where he's, like, really contrary, but he's not really good at it. So I'll be like, hey, what, do you want some apple juice or some grape juice? And he'll be like, no. Like, so you don't want either one? Okay, I'll put them away. And he's like, no, I want juice.
It's better than my son. It's like, do you want apple juice or do you want grape juice? Do you want apple juice or do you want grape juice? Hey, you want apple juice or grape juice? I said grape juice.
No, my nephew, because they repeat stuff that their mom tells them. So a lot of the time they misbehave and she goes, what did I tell you?
Yeah.
You know, after she's told him something. But so he does that to me and he's never told me anything. Like I'll walk up and turn on a light and he's supposed to be asleep and he just like appears at the edge of his room and he's like, what did I tell you?
I just see this. You're laying there quietly and then all of a sudden the light flicks on, you open your eyes and your nephew's like right in front of your face. What did I tell you, Rodrigo?
I don't know, Tiny Spectre. What did you tell me?
All right. Well, it sounds like you had a really great time.
Yeah, it was fun.
How many slices of meatloaf would you give this?
I would definitely give this vacation 4 slices of meatloaf. And the reason why I would only give it 4 instead of 5 is because I tried and tried and tried and tried to coordinate the whole family to go see the Muppets.
Oh,
and we just couldn't do it.
Yeah. It's okay. You didn't miss anything.
You didn't like it that much?
It was okay, but it had too much of the new Muppet.
Oh,
not enough of the old Muppets.
And you get that in the newer
Muppets. Same way, whenever
like
the Muppets
like
went to Manhattan and we had to deal with those damn rats.
Right.
And the same way when the prawn
guide started showing up. It's like that every movie, pretty much.
Don't you mock Pepe.
Some people love it. Yeah, I just thought it was
good.
What you should go see, though, is Tintin. That is an awesome movie. That's what I hear. That is an awesome movie. I want to know also, Rodrigo, about Dark Ascension. There were some magic stuffs that came out over the break while you were gone.
Right. Dark Ascension is the next set in the Innistrad block. You know, we talked about Innistrad. That's the one that has, like, the cards that are a card on both sides.
Yep.
There's going to be some new double-faced cards in this one.
Yay.
Yeah, not crazy about those. They also have a new mechanic called Undying, which is... if
my mechanic is called Steve.
If you're if you're familiar with Persist, it's like Persist, except instead of putting a -1/-1 counter on your creature, it's a +1/+1 counter on your creature when it dies. So basically what it does is, here's a monster, and the monster goes rawr, and then you're like, oh no, a monster, and you kill it. And then the monster comes back and it's bigger, because it gets a +1/+1 counter on it after it dies. So it actually means that after a creature dies, it comes back bigger, which is cool. The other one is a general rules term called Fateful Hour, which means when your health or when your life drops to 5 or less, things get powered up.
Mm-hmm.
So, for one, they have this guy who has this power, and as long as you have 5 or less life, other creatures you control get +2/+2. So it actually powers up all your creatures. You know, it's like when your life gets past a certain point, your creatures actually get more powerful.
Yeah.
Another thing in Dark Ascension is, was it? Oh, crap. I forgot the name. Reckless Looting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Faithless Looting. That's the one that's tied to that variant card from IDW.
Right. It's a red card with flashback that mm-hmm. allows you to cycle through your deck a little faster. First previewed on Major Spoilers.
Woohoo! Exclusive.
That's right. So, yeah, we're moving up in the world is what I'm getting at. Dark Ascension looks interesting. They've cut down the number of double-faced cards. And perhaps the craziest announcement is that the third set, which I believe is called Avacyn Restored or something like that, is not going to have any double-faced cards. So there's been some talking around the internet as to why that is. And WotC has a reason that they're giving as to why that is. But some of us think that there might be a different reason.
Okay.
And we'll probably talk about that later.
Yep.
As that release gets closer.
Yep, definitely. Okay. So there's some news from Rodrigo that we haven't heard in a couple of weeks. We've got a review of a vacation that sounds like a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. I'm watching this Pocoyo on YouTube right now.
It's creepy, isn't it?
I can't hear the audio, of course, so I don't know how great Stephen Fry is, but I love the rendering, the animation, I mean, the actions by the characters, insane.
Yeah, whenever
only
Pocoyo,
Steven can
like,
watch a cartoon and go, wow, that polygon rate is fascinating.
I sit there and look at that stuff.
And I do too, and that's actually a big part of what each character has, like, a different frame rate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Pocoyo's frame rate is really
smooth. Yeah.
And snappy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the duck snaps a lot more. Mm-hmm. And, like, the elephant has a really long... I don't know. There's just
this
something about the animation.
The one that I just finished watching, which was about 7 minutes too long, did not feature the elephant or the puppy dog. So
right.
I just saw the duck and the boy. So I'm giving it, tentatively, without hearing the narration, I'm giving it 2.5 slices of meatloaf.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid for a kid's show. And it is a little kid's show.
I can tell it definitely is. This is not something the oldest boy would watch, but
right.
the youngest boy, who right now just loves Mickey Mouse mm-hmm. Funhouse or whatever it is, would be
Clubhouse.
All over this. Let's talk about some
comic
books.
Let's find the Triangle Bush.
You've been watching my porn collection.
Hey, man, you can't make this stuff up.
Let's talk about some comic books this week last week from Dynamite Entertainment.
Oh.
The Lone Ranger number one. Now, we did have a really great run of Lone Ranger from Dynamite Entertainment before. This is a brand new series written by Andy Parks and art by Esteve Poles, I guess, is his name. This is kind of an interesting story because it takes place in the Oklahoma Territory. Some looters are coming to this guy's house to get all of his money. And in the process, the farmer's wife gets killed and he's all distraught over this. He doesn't know what's going to happen. The Lone Ranger has heard about this and is coming from Kansas to the Oklahoma Territory to take care of this. And there's a great opening piece. We're really running out of time, but Oklahoma Territory, 1870. Settlers told themselves that they came out west for all manner of reasons. Land, opportunity, freedom. They told their wives or families all those things were waiting out here past the western edge of civilization. But perhaps if they told themselves the truth, they might admit that they all came seeking the same thing, a chance to face this vast, untamed wilderness that is America, a chance to succeed here on their own terms. And then it goes on and on and on, and found out that this was great because it was an editorial from the Lincoln County News, Lincoln, Kansas, of 1882. I thought that was kind of a nice little tie into here. But the Lone Ranger comes and gets to this farmer's house just as the bandits have come back and they're burning the guy's house down. And of course, the Lone Ranger does his thing, bang, bang, pow, pow, captures all the bad guys, doesn't kill any of them. The farmer, this is really the story of the farmer who is so distraught over losing his wife, doesn't know how he's going to continue. He's about ready to blow his brains out. When the Lone Ranger shows up, and the Lone Ranger just basically says, hey, you know what? You're going to survive because you have to. You have to be strong. And we get a flashback to when John's mother died and how his father and his brother and he had to be strong after she passed. And basically he helps the farmer out, gives him a bunch of silver, says this should last you the year. When we get back to Wichita, I'm going to send supplies so that you can rebuild your farm from the ground up. It's a great little story, and it ends with a great high-o silver, and off into the sunset goes the Lone Ranger. It's a great book. I didn't think that, especially with that Death of the Zorro piece that had the Lone Ranger crossover in it, I didn't think Dynamite was going to be able to come back with another great tale. This is a great first issue, first arc of Hard Country. I love the art, love the story, which was really good, very emotional. And it's great. It's a six-part tale. I don't know if this is going to be an ongoing from IDW or a six-issue one-shot, but four slices of meatloaf out of this one. Really, really love the Lone Ranger Hard Country. Go check it out. It came out last week. It's probably still available, probably there on one of those digital apps, so check it out.
Cool.
Matthew, over to you. I want to know about another book. Like, boy, we're not even reviewing any DC stuff this week. No Marvel stuff this week.
Oh, no Marvel stuff either.
People's heads are going to spin. You've got something from Image Comics this week.
Oh, my head is spinning like
Image
Google.
Comics. Well, technically, Rodrigo's Vacation was in fact sponsored by Marvel. So that's cool. Mudman number 2 by Paul Grist. I actually picked up Mudman number 1 on a whim.
Yeah.
And liked it so much I immediately ran home and wrote a review for
the website. 5-star review, if I remember.
Yeah, and it was a really, really strong outing, but it was a really, really strong outing in kind of a retro way, the good kind of retro.
Yeah.
Basically, last issue, young kid shows up, and he's a young kid, and he's like, I sure am a young kid, and all sorts of things happen. He and his best friend end up in a house. He puts on a superhero suit that he finds hanging out somewhere, trying to escape, and ends up getting shot in the chest and falling down at the end. And the ending was really the only part of it that I questioned, because it kind of came out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit about a mysterious house, but the ending was like, ooh. Well, this issue number 2 of Mudman, takes place simultaneously to last issue from the perspective of the man who shot him. It turns out that he's actually a criminal. He and his friend basically knocked over a bullion truck or something, and they are hiding in the little town of Burnbridge-on-Sea, which is where the boy who becomes Mudman lives. The first thing that I love about this issue is the two characters have very specific dialects. One is kind of a Christopher Eccleston up north kind of accent.
Right.
And the other one is vaguely Russian. You are not the boss of me. And you can clearly hear these voices arguing back and forth. And I hear Nico Bellic and Christopher Eccleston's Ninth Doctor arguing in my head throughout this whole thing. The two criminals end up finding a place to stay. They're hiding out. They're trying to make sure that nobody finds them with their money. And about halfway through the issue, we see the boy, whose name escapes me right off the top of my head, running away, as it happened last issue, when he came and got into the mysterious house on the edge of town that they were renting. But this takes it back to the perspective. We see these criminals, they capture a cop. The cop turns out to be Mudman's father. This we saw also last issue. Mm-hmm. Detective Constable Tom Craig of the Somerset Constabulary. There is really not much of the hero in the book. Now, this is issue 2. I don't know a whole lot about the hero, but it's really interesting that about page 15, we meet up with page 15 of issue one, where Vinny sneaks into a back room, finds the weirdly lit room with the superhero costume in it, shoots Mudman in the chest. And then the story continues as being made of mud, as a Mudman would be. This kid instinctively starts using his powers to take down the two criminals. It's very old school. It kind of reminds me of a mid-70s Bronze Age Marvel book. At the end, the hero gets the gold and takes off, and they chase him across the mud flats, and they get hooked up in the mud and get arrested, and Mudman escapes at the last moment. The guy who draws this is the same gentleman who drew Jack Staff, which is another Image book.
Yeah, I thought it looked familiar.
Yeah, it fell on and off my radar. I believe his name is Paul Grist, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And, oh my word, this is such a pretty, pretty book. I mean, seriously. And it's the kind of book that you love to see because the writer and the artist are the same guy. So he has this idea. He immediately puts it on the page. There's a fascinating two-page bit in the end about the evolution of the logo. Talking about the logo on the books and how he hates the fact that now all the logos on comics just look like somebody's been playing with type on a computer screen. And he points out, yes, I have seen the new 52. But it has a letters page, for one thing. It has a mysterious girl in it. Something weird is going on. The hero has powers. He's a kind of a Peter Parker schmucky little guy. It's fun. This is another five slice of meatloaf for me. Simply because it's beautiful. It's simple. It takes, you know, it plays with superhero tropes in a loving way. It doesn't necessarily shoot them in the foot. It's covering different ground. It's not necessarily, you know, completely fresh and a revamp of everything you've ever seen, and it's not like anything you've seen before. But it's a new take on things that I love, and I really enjoy the color palette. That two-tone brown of the main character just really pops. He uses a lot of grays and a lot of blues, you know. It's not quite black and white. It's not monochrome in most places, but that costume just really pops out. And the saving grace, if you look at the cover, right next to the logo is a little picture of the hero going, "Ha, I'm a hero." You remember when comics used to have up in the upper right-hand corner, there was always the picture of the hero. Yeah. Ah, or the guy, you know, Spider-Man leaping out going, "Ah, I'm Spider-Man." I missed that. Five slices of meatloaf.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, one of the things that I said we were going to do in 2012 was we were going to start bringing in some of the other Major Spoilers staff writers to give us their thoughts. And this week in the hot seat, we've got Zach Wolf.
Thanks, guys. This week, I am taking a look at Robert Kirkman's Super Dinosaur number 7. I picked this book up after hearing and reading our very own Rob speak so highly of it last week, and I'm really glad I did. This issue picks right up in the action with Super Dinosaur and Derek getting in some training on their virtual simulator, and from there it does this really nice back and forth between a race that Aaron and Derek get into, and the plans that the Sharkman and Triceratops are making for their future. From there, we're given a quick page that makes it seem that Dr. Max Maximus could possibly have a clone, but after I took the time and flipped through the book to look at the different art between the two, to me, it seems like it's more likely a twin than a clone. I really had no background information going into this book, so I didn't quite know what all the plot lines were of Derek and his dad and his mom being missing. But I found this book to be a really lighthearted read, and it was definitely some building blocks being laid for big action sequences and different hooks coming forth in the next few issues. Jason Howard does the art for Super Dinosaur, and I just think it's wonderful. His lines are really smooth, his layouts are great, his splash pages were well used and added to the story. I just think the tone that he goes for really adds to the lighthearted feel of the story and just boosts it up to another level. I had a lot of fun reading my first issue of Super Dinosaur, so I am now going through Comixology and my local comic book store to find the first 6 issues so I can be completely caught up with this series. I am going to give Super Dinosaur number 7 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf today. I'm Zach Wolf, and we'll be back with more soon. Be sure to head over to majorspoilers.com to read the rest of my reviews and so much more.
Thank you so much, Zach. And if you would like to follow Zach on Twitter, you can follow him at ZWolf. That's his Twitter handle, ZWolf.
And it should be noted that Zach has recently been crowned United States heavyweight champion.
There we go. Okay, the reviews are done.
Oh, wait, that's Zach.
That means that it is time for the major spoilers.
Hey, Rodrigo.
What's up?
Hey, Rodrigo.
What?
We missed you, man. You know, there are a couple of jokes that should have never,
it's time
never happened.
For the major spoilers poll of the week. There you go.
It's time!
Man, you're delayed.
My
so
shtick.
Bad.
My shtick. For the major spoilers poll of the week.
Love me some Phineas and Ferb. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's another one. I got a chance to watch a couple episodes of Phineas and Ferb.
You've watched that show, or is this the first time you watched it?
I've seen random chunks of episodes here and there. Mostly when your children are sitting there watching it when I come to record things.
104 days of summer vacation. Two stepbrothers, cool. Actually. Mm-hmm. Phineas Flynn and Ferb Fletcher have amazing adventures with their friends all summer long. They've got a little platypus pet who's actually a secret agent.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dr. Doofenshmirtz.
And no one can make that noise.
I don't know how. You know, D. Bradley Baker, I think that's who it is. D. Bradley Baker.
Yeah, D. Bradley Baker.
He's paid a crap ton of money to do that
noise.
The thing is, I was watching that Phineas and Ferb Across the Second Two and a Half Dimension or whatever that
second
was.
Second Dimension. Yeah,
Second Dimension movie. And the climax of the movie was very disappointing to me, because normally whenever we see Phineas and Ferb, they're working together to complete a goal and have fun and do whatever. The climax of that movie was all Phineas.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me thinking, who's the real genius? And I don't mean Val Kilmer floating in a chair with attached to weather balloons or a house full of popcorn. I'm talking about who's the real brains of the two. Let's pit brother against brother. And see what happens this week in our poll of the week. Battle of the brains, Rodrigo.
I think that they really complement each other very well.
They very well do.
You've got your A type and you're not at all an A type. Mm-hmm. Well, although, you know, he takes care of business when he needs to. I think that, you know, as far as who's smarter, it is difficult to tell. I think I'll probably actually go with Phineas just because he seems to be the idea man.
Mm.
Even though a lot of the technical expertise seems to come from Ferb.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Matthew, you got some thoughts on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, and Phineas and Ferb are actually kind of an archetypical duo. You see their type.
Mm-hmm.
Geordi LaForge and Data are kind of that same sort of type.
Yeah, sure they are.
You know, to some degree, Batman and Dick Grayson mm-hmm. are kind of that same sort of type. You have the guy who is really, really, really good at people stuff, who goes, hey, why don't we build us a rocket or fight a mummy or climb up the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah.
And then you have the other guy who's actually the brains of the outfit, you know, the one who figures out how it works. But
right.
What it broke down to me was, who actually has the harder part of the job? Phineas has the job of going, yeah, I know what we're going to do today. We're going to blow something up. No.
Right.
We're going to teach this yak how to roller skate. And at that point, it's Ferb's job to craft roller skates big enough for a yak and then figure out how it all works. When they became mm-hmm. the superhero, the Beak,
yep.
It was all about Ferb, the technical side of things, and Phineas being, you know, the face of it. It's kind of that Iron Man, Captain America thing going along. So for me, I went with Ferb simply because you said, who is the real genius?
Yep.
Ferb is the one who has the harder job. Yep. Ferb actually has to say, let's make Fruit Loops fly out of somebody's butt.
Yep. Yeah, that's I'm right there with you, Matthew. You and I agree, because anybody can come up with an idea. Hey, Rodrigo, I know mm-hmm. what we're going to do today. We're going to project the internet right into our eyeballs. Get to it. See? Now, how genius is that? Yes, Steve Jobs came up with the idea, but Steve Jobs is not the genius behind Apple. It's all the people that are working behind him and with him and beside him.
Hmm.
So for that reason, Ferb...
We may have lost like a third of our audience just now.
Yeah, come on. I'm as big a fan as Apple as you're ever going to find. Yeah. But Ferb Fletcher, to me, is the real genius behind Phineas and Ferb.
Yep.
Commenters... Commenters threw out some comments where I voted for Ferb. He may not say much, but he always knows how to build every crazy thing that they come up with. I'm going with Ferb. Phineas is the main idea guy. Ferb makes it happen. He's always the one in the background. Let's see. Despite the high amount of praise given by Steven on most podcasts released on Days Ending in Y, I still have no idea who these guys are, so I'll go with the guy with the triangle head, which is Phineas Flynn, who really is the charismatic person of the group.
Yeah. When I have richness, I'm going to hire somebody to monitor the internet. And this person's job is to find any post anywhere in the world on the internet that says, I have no idea who X is, and delete it.
No, I think you should better
with porn.
I think you should better make use of your funds by sending that person to the commenter's house and giving them a 2-hour lecture on what they know nothing about.
Are you Magnolia Fan 19?
Let's see. Most people in the comment section are saying Ferb. How does the rest of the Major Spoilers Nation vote, Matthew?
155 votes is what I'm seeing right now. A whopping 77% of those, which would be, let's see, about 95 votes, maybe? I don't know. Math is hard. no, about 104 votes, and then you just carry the one. So many people saying Ferb, 77%, 23% saying Phineas. And most of the feedback is that Phineas is the idea guy.
Yeah.
And that Phineas doesn't have to be the genius. Phineas is just that guy who says, yeah, na-na-na-na. And I think that's because all of us have worked for that one guy who's like, you know what we need? Rocket pants.
Yeah, you know what we need?
Schleicher,
we need a Major Spoiler staff picks. Guys, go.
Well, I would like to defend my choice a little bit in that.
No, that's fine.
There's
go ahead.
There's a difference between a guy who just comes up with ideas and a guy who comes up with good ideas or awesome ideas.
Right.
And it takes a certain amount of insight and imagination.
You know, if I were to say that these guys had engineering degrees, Ferb would have the mechanical engineering, mm-hmm. and Phineas would have theoretical or the other, you know.
Social engineering.
Yeah, social engineering. But, I mean, I bet they both know physics and mechanics. They know all the sciences.
They all know all this stuff, but
I mean, you see the episode where they're working on the time machine together. Mm-hmm. It's not Ferb telling him what to do. Granted, most of the time Phineas is playing the P.T. Barnum trying to get everybody excited about the project, while Ferb is back there building the giant roller coaster that goes around the city. So, you know, on the one hand, I can see your argument there, mm-hmm. but still wrong. Robert.
She's a gear-grinding, hard-driving, truck-driving girl.
That was a good episode. They're all great episodes.
I think it may be that I think if Ferb is perceived as smarter because Ferb doesn't say much. Ferb has that Silent Bob thing going for him. When he does say something, it has to be like a burned-down pearl of wisdom.
Yeah.
Because he gets like one line per episode.
You can't have platypus without us. That's one of his lines. Those nuggets of wisdom right there. No, he really does have the best lines when he does speak. Mm-hmm. And there are times when he tries to speak and Phineas just jumps in and cuts him off. And he's got a crush on Vanessa, so you know that's got to be a big plus right there.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a head shaped exactly like a blender.
Like the letter P. All right, everybody, you can head over to majorspoilers.com, cast your vote in the poll of the week, or if you want to go back in the archives and vote on any of those, you can certainly do it. And use the comment section. Use the Major Spoilers forums. We're going to take a quick little beep-boop break so we can save this podcast so we don't lose it. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about The Dark Crystal, Creation Myths Volume 1. Stick around. I guess I'm going to have to just stop saying stick around because that beep-boop is so much shorter for the listeners than it is for us. I mean, it's microseconds for the listeners. Bloop. Hello, welcome back. Today we're going to be talking about Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, Creation Myths Volume 1, an original graphic novel out this week from Arkea Entertainment. A nice little 1995 hardcover that gives us the origin story.
That's weird. That makes it like 20 years old.
The origin story of the Dark Crystal universe.
How can it be out this week and still be a 1995 hardcover?
It is less than 100 pages.
2012?
It's less than 100 pages. 96 pages.
He's
Matthew.
Oh,
he's not Matthew again.
We hardly knew ye.
He's not.
We're just no selling you this week, Matthew.
This week. That's what makes it funny. This week.
Rodrigo.
Hello.
Tell us about the Dark Crystal.
Okay, The Dark Crystal is this totally awesome movie, right? About these little guys called Gelflings. And then they're all like, oh no, the world is dying. And the old guys that they hang out with are all like, oh, you gotta find the Dark Crystal and replace it or some stuff like that. So the main character goes on this awesome adventure.
Meets a girl. About the other one.
Right.
The other tangent.
Oh, yeah. So he embarks on this adventure to find the Dark Crystal, which is controlled by the Skeksis. They're like, right? And they're like bird monsters. So then there's like these guys that are on stilts and they're like, rah, rah, rah. And there's like this little guy that's all like, rah, 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 and he has a giant mouth. These are all puppets, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a girl.
Where does Gobo come in? I remember Gobo.
Gobo.
They meet Yoda. They meet girl Yoda, which is actually the central character. Yeah, because if you listen to her, it's voiced by a woman, but the puppeteer was Frank Oz, and then they dubbed a voice over her.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why Ogre talks like Yoda, because I don't know if. This was after Star Wars.
Yeah, after Empire Strikes Back, for sure.
Right, right.
And what's fascinating about Dark Crystal is this was a huge departure for Jim Henson Studios, who at the time were just known for the Muppet movie, the Muppet Show.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden we're taking you to this fantastic far-off world with magic and monsters and creatures and just things you'd never seen before. I think Fraggle Rock was going on at the same time, if I remember right. So Dark Crystal is a total departure as far as a movie goes.
Right.
This book is taking a look at what happened before that. In fact, the title of the book is Creation Myths, right? Mm-hmm. Is it myth or is it reality is what we're kind of asked, but take every major religion and every major belief system on how our world was created, smash it together and give it a good rub, and that's what this book is.
Yeah, there's a lot of animistic stories here. There's a lot of kind of messianic ideas as well, prophecies, visitors from the sky, things like that.
So the book starts out with the creation of Agra or whatever.
Well, the
book,
we actually have a narrator.
Oh, right.
Who apparently.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what that's about.
Right. I've
got a hint, or I've got a clue, maybe.
Yeah, the narrator is giving us this story for services rendered, so we don't know who the narrator is speaking with. But then who he is, or she is. He kind of launches into, like, the very first story of the Dark Crystal universe, which is how the planet of, what is it?
Thrarn.
Thra came to be.
And you know where Agra came from? I didn't realize she was related to Swamp Thing.
Yeah. It's kind of that.
Yeah.
The way that it's done Agra basically built the planet was going along great, and then all of a sudden it just created her out of everything. And she is undying. She's an eternal, immortal. She is in touch with everything of the world, and
ugly
is all heck. Give us a religious equivalent. Is she Adam? Is she
no?
Is
she? I think the Gelflings are humans in this world,
right?
So she is Gaia to a certain degree.
Okay,
except
no, I'll go with that.
Your Mother Earth type,
right?
Really.
Right. No, yeah, she's really earthy because she's literally from the earth.
She's the first Prometheus of this kind of thing. You know, she's the first one that comes down and teaches the Gelflings how to not be little feral creatures, you know, gives them their first taste of society. She's, you know, in a lot of creation myths, it's about the gods end up defeating something and then the gods that people have are the gods of society, and Agra is that first social god that teaches them to talk and to sing and to hunt and to farm.
She teaches them about death,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is pretty
yeah,
pretty interesting. Go ahead, Matthew.
There's a little bit of the Gollum of Prague in there too, and that may not be something, you know, that was intentional, but basically it's kind of a mud creature that's there to defend these people. Now, having seen the movie, we know it doesn't necessarily work.
Right.
She doesn't get to define all the or defend all the Gelflings successfully, but I think that her role is kind of as the teacher protector, that central figure who's, you know, not necessarily in charge, but, you know, the wise person who steps in when the Gelflings need to be defended from external stuff or things they don't necessarily need to
know. I like that idea of Gaia.
And a character who teaches them to help themselves.
Right. And actually, from that point, and this is the first chapter, the Gelflings build a huge civilization. Mm-hmm. They go out and explore, and they have different tribes, and it becomes very interesting. And the for Agra, she becomes super obsessed with being in touch with everything. The crystal is there. It has a song. There's a prophecy. And she just becomes so wrapped up in the whole universe that she kind of forgets things. And in chapter two, we find out that she has a son.
Yep.
And what's that little booger's name?
Ronip.
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 And in mythology, he would be a Loki character. He is a trickster character, is what he is. And he.
But the weird thing to me was, I thought the movie was pretty explicit that Agra was not necessarily all female. I mean, there was kind of an underlying expectation that she was both male and female.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't necessarily prevent her from having a son, especially.
True.
Because in true mythological fashion, they completely blow over how that happened.
You know, that's like, interesting,
and
because
then some, there is a mention later of his father.
And he's like, father?
And that's the thing. That's what I was, at first, because you don't hear the mention of the father until much later, I was like, oh, well, one day Agra was like, I would like to be pregnant, she was pregnant. Or one day she woke up and I was like, I am pregnant.
Right, right. And so there is that divine something gave her the child.
Right.
And what's creepy about Ronup is he's always a child. It's almost like he was formed as an 8-year-old and always stays as an 8-year-old for eons.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see in this chapter how Ronup goes from a impressionable child to meeting friends when the Gelflings were still young in their generation, to like 4 or 5 generations later when his best friend as a child is now
dying,
on her deathbed.
He
has not changed at all. I feel sorry for this character. Mm-hmm. Kind of in the same way that
that's a short sequence, too. I mean, it's only a few pages between the point where Tavra is befriending him and the point where Tavra is dead.
Right.
And I love the way they use that lifeline as kind of a scale for this, because the tale that that's being told here is a tale that takes, you know, I'm thinking eons.
Well, that's what I was thinking,
just
too.
Time immemorial. And then we see this, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and by the way, that little kid that you saw 10 pages ago, now she's an old Gelfling and she's dying horribly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right in the middle of that, we see the arrival of the Urxes, or whatever that they're called.
The Urskek.
Urskek.
Because
Urskek.
Agra knows that when the three suns align, something is going to happen. And sure enough, the suns align, the light strikes the crystal, blows her eye out, and they arrive. And they are these celestial beings. And again, if you've read Chariots of the Gods or any of these other kind of myths that there are aliens that have come to our planet to help us along, that's what these guys represent. These are aliens from another planet who also have a crystal that allows them to pass through. Yeah. And so
from the 70s. The 70s build up, Apollo and Starbuck, not the new ones.
Yeah. And they build up the Crystal Palace, not the one in, you know, Utah, wherever it's at.
The James Spader movie. Yes. That's entirely different.
But again, they help. They serve as another catalyst to move civilization along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had actually forgotten the Urskek's part in the actual movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that'll tell you how long it's been since I sat down and watched it.
We did a review.
I saw it once when I was a kid, and I saw it once when we reviewed it.
Yeah.
That was actually years ago, though, I think.
And it's like a couple of years ago that we did it, yeah. This is like our fourth year of this podcast.
I've slept since then. But excuse me. But the arrival of the Urskek is another thing where you're just like, ooh, primordial myth going on.
Yeah.
The fallen angels walking around all on fire and everything.
Well, but see, we don't know that they're fallen angels. We just, from our point of view, again, depending on seen the Dark Crystal or not seen the Dark Crystal movie.
You talk about Prometheus,
mm-hmm.
who brings fire to humans despite the wishes of the gods. That's kind of what the Urskek that we see are.
Mm-hmm.
They are exiles from their own world. They are criminals.
Right. We don't find that out until the end of the book,
much later.
Yeah.
But they are bringing society and transportation and communication.
Right.
They are elevating the Gelflings from a tribal society to kind of an urban society.
Well, I was going
to
say, weren't they pretty much Babylonian society by the time the Urskeks arrive? You know, they had villages and they had tribes. But once they arrive, suddenly now they have the Tripoli, the Egypt, the Rome.
Right, exactly.
And I don't know if that is when they introduce music or music comes, but...
Well, there's always music because everything's based around the song.
Right, right. But we get this interesting...
talking about... In the earliest appearances, learning the song of things.
We get this interesting story about a Gelfling who goes out and adventures because he's trying to find this one song that's stuck in his head, but he can't find it. And he ventures far out into the seas, eats a magical fruit that sends him on an LSD trip, and then he discovers that the song he's looking for is actually coming from one of the Urskeks. And he hears the Urskek singing, and then he says... After that, I knew I could never sing again, or the song was so beautiful or something that he just knew he could
sad.
Never.
It's a sad song of longing, and that's the first we see that there's something missing from the Urskeks. There's something else there.
And we find out, and this is where Rumpelstiltskin...
Ronip.
Ronip comes back into play. Terrible with names. Ronip comes back into play because Agra goes off to meditate and be one with the universe, be one with the planet again. And he listens in on the Urskeks having a conversation, and it's the song that the little sailor Gelfling heard was them trying to communicate with their home planet and saying, when are you going to let us come back? And they're like, we have no communication with them. We haven't in a long time. They've abandoned us. We're just going to have to stay here. And that's... When the sun comes forward and is like, I've got the magic eye, I've got the magic of sight, and I can see inside your head that you guys are really evil. Or there's a dark part of these guys. And he's actually peered into the great crystal itself and sees that it too has a dark part and
inside,
a light part of it too. And
there's an interesting sub-argument in that where the Urskeks are all like, we seek only to serve and perfect your people. And Ronit makes what I believe to be a particularly, understandable argument is we don't need your perfecting.
Right.
My people do not need, my planet does not need you to come in and fix it.
Is this?
You know, that's kind of a weird statement, too, to see in mythological context.
Well, but it's also somewhat true. I mean, here's Ronip and his mother, who were, until the Urskeks came, basically the gods,
mm-hmm.
right? And then these new gods have come in, and he is feeling left out, rejected. He can't age. All of his friends are gone. And what is he going to do? He wants these new guys out, and the best way he's going to do it is get all the Gelflings to rise up.
Mm-hmm.
Demagoguery.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think he's doing it on purpose to harm the Gelflings. I mean, this is him standing
not.
Up for his beliefs. But, when you look at him as the trickster character,
you have to
think about what his ulterior motive is. And he's seen something inside the crystal.
I think he thinks that he's doing the right thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But he's certainly
doing it for
selfish reasons.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I don't know if I would necessarily call him a trickster character, but he's definitely, the wild card in all of this. He's the one character whose motivations are
questionable.
A little alien, for lack of a better word.
Well, the thing about Ronip is that he is old and powerful enough to know that things are going on, but he's not wise enough to make the right decision around it, I think is one way to look at it. So the same things that he sees the same things, and he sees a little bit more than what Agra sees. He sees certain things, but that's partially because Augur is not looking for that darkness. She's right. just looking at all the positives. Mm-hmm. He is specifically right. going in and looking at what's negative about this, and he finds it.
Yeah.
And even yeah. though it's concealed and nothing's happening right now, he's like, no, 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 look, they're under the surface. There's something bad.
Right. And Augur says, no, these, you know, she wants to believe in the good of all things. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, maybe you losing your eye is, you know, I can see what's going on. And he goes, I'm going to show you and you're going to be sorry.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
See, and well, and that's the thing, knowing what we know as the omnipotent, well, not so much reader, but, right. you know, as the person who's seen what comes next, there is like classic tragedy written all over this because.
Oh, yeah.
This is a new character, Ronip. Yeah. Well, new in that this takes place, what, a thousand?
A million years.
This takes place at some point a billion years before the events of the Dark Crystal.
Right.
At which point Jen believes that he is the last of the Gelflings.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that something happens to Ronip, and we know that it's probably going to be awful. And, you know, if I read this story right and if I remember the story right, it's probably going to be awful in a very, you know, classical poetic sense where he's ripped apart. But then there's also the fact that they make a big point of there being 18 Urskicks.
Right.
And at the end of the movie, there were only like a dozen. So I'm thinking.
Well, there was, you know, a scene in the Dark Crystal. There was a scene in the Dark Crystal where the Skeksis died and the Olam guys and the Mystic dies right. at the same time and they disappear.
So we know that they can die. And I'm wondering if, you know, the lesser numbers is part of this whole upcoming tragedy. This is part one of three. Is that right?
Two or three. I don't remember what it is, but my goodness, I don't remember if this was, if this is an original graphic novel. So this is the first time that we've seen this. This hasn't been printed in individual issues, but holy crap. This was a perfect cliffhanger moment in this story because again, now we have the beginning and the end. It's the middle adventure where things become really interesting. And I want to read this second volume.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think this was going to be that interesting. And, you know, I think everybody kind of knows my views on, you know, an organized religion, but this kind of takes the best from all of the religions. So this was a little bit better for me in terms of looking at it from that spiritual aspect. But this was a really good story. And even in between the prose portions, where you learn about how do the girl Gelflings get their wings you know, where did the song come from and how did the world become created? Those are all wonderful passages.
Tales of Gelfling heroes.
Yeah. Those are all wonderful passages in this. And then just this, as Matthew said, this ominous foreboding moment of we know what's going to happen, but we're not going to tell you right now.
Yeah, we know where this ends up. And I honestly, when you said, hey, let's do this, I'm like, oh, God, the guys are going to be talking about their freaking Muppets again. But, you know, not necessarily in that horrible a way, because I enjoyed the movie as well. Mm. But getting into this, it was completely unexpected. I mean, when they say myth on the cover, they're talking for flat-out creation myth. Mm. This isn't like 50 pages of, and then Tom Bombadil danced around while they walked and walked and walked. This is actual creation myth, and it's told to us, to someone, by this narrator who's telling it like a campfire story, like an actual oral tradition carried down and handed down. So there are bits where you're just like, and then Augur had a son and you're like, wait, when did, oh no, that's a story we haven't told you. We'll get to that. You know, eventually I'll tell you how you met your mother. But I love the progression of this and the fact that we're covering all this time and we're like, and then this happened. And then on the seventh day, Augur went, wow, that sure was awesome. But I think I lost an eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I mean, I love mythology in general. I think that the ancient stories of how people got to this world and how people learned to cook and to not kill each other, or why they shouldn't kill each other, or how the first person ever to die died. I find all that stuff really fascinating, and I love it when a writer can take the themes of those things and spin a new story that feels like an ancient legend, because it's difficult to do. It's difficult to, you know, there are so many people out there right now trying to take ancient legends and modernizing them.
Well, we've seen that in the, what was that recent one?
The Immortals.
The Immortals, yeah.
It's significantly harder to take modern sensibilities and legendize them, which is what this does.
Mm-hmm. What's great about this, and let's talk about the art really, really quickly, is Brian Froud, I believe is how you pronounce his name, was the illustrator, was the illustrator who did the original Dark Crystal concept work developed all the characters. They got him to come on board for this book, mm-hmm. which I think is great because then all the designs, all the world things are all built right out of his work and not somebody else interpreting what he's done.
Right.
Right. You know, and I think that that is just wonderful. And I enjoyed the art. I think what makes the style unique is it's both alien and familiar at the same time. Mm-hmm. Where on the one hand, you mm-hmm. look at Agra and you're like, bleh. Or you're looking at her son and like, bleh, that kid's creepy. There's something wrong with that boy kind of right. stuff. But on the other hand, there's frailty and there's life. Mm-hmm. There's something mm-hmm. human behind all the characters that we see.
And in Legend, what it accomplishes really well, especially with, you know, the way that Agra and Ronip look, is that in Legends, ancient legends weren't always clean. They weren't always pretty. They mm-hmm. weren't always, you know, nice, you know, black mm-hmm. and white kind of stuff. I mean, they're both hideous. They're both weird. Agra is you know, female,
mm-hmm.
but she's got, like, weird whiskers and stuff like that. She, know, mm-hmm. There's nothing that says, oh, this is clearly how you should feel about this character by the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear mm-hmm. that it like creates another layer of these ancient myths are like this because that's the sensibility in Thra, mm-hmm. not on Earth.
Yeah,
peering into the mythology of an alien world.
Yeah, and I just the art just blew me away. Even the volume even includes the free comic book day mm-hmm. edition, which was kind of like a trailer to the story.
Yeah, it was basically coming attractions for this.
And that art was is great as well.
Yeah. Throughout this, the thing that I really was amazed by is we occasionally talk about the computer overcoloring.
Right.
Or the use of like a color hold as a background or doing like, hey, let's just do this digital effect. The last two reviews I did for the site, when I did the thing and I'm like, okay, I'm going to put a page up, it was really easy to do because the background was nothing more than, you know, a color hold. It was just a little gradient effect that they did in the background. That doesn't happen here. The backgrounds are fully drawn, and even when it's drawn in kind of a softer palette and a softer edge, you know what's going on. And it's very clear that this is based in that same reality. Random bugs will show up, and the random bugs, you're like, oh, I could see that in the movie. Or even I have seen that in the movie in some mm-hmm. cases. And the little guy, when the Gelfling is playing his little flutey thing, you know, you can tell.
Yeah, you can hear that
this is something.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything that is on this page, some of it is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is absolutely disgusting. Even Agra is off-putting. But it's horrifying in a really beautiful and awesome, you know, in the classical sense of the word kind of way. And when he reaches up and he grabs the fruit in the second passage, I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah,
don't
eat
the fruit.
Yeah.
Didn't you read Swamp Thing 34?
This is from Arcade Entertainment. It is the first of three graphic novels, so I'm going to guess these aren't going to be coming out monthly, but probably quarterly over the next year. I want to read the other two volumes when they come out.
Absolutely.
I think we should talk about them on the show.
We have a show?
We do.
Can I be on the show?
No. Bottom line for me is I love this book. I didn't think I was going to like it at all. I really like The Dark Crystal, but I don't have an undying love for it the way that people have love for, like, Rodrigo's love for The Dark Crystal or the way people go gaga over Labyrinth.
Right.
But this was a good read. Good story, good creation myth, great art. 1995 for a 96-page book, that's not too bad. Hardcover?
Mm-hmm.
I say pick it up.
Oh, absolutely. For me, you know, this... I was not expecting something great. I was actually a little bit leery of somebody messing with a property that I like
mm-hmm.
as much as I like The Dark Crystal. But this book was basically perfect. It not only was respectful and thoughtful about a work that I really enjoy, but actually managed to expand it and do it properly and do it well. This is a read on its own. Even if you haven't seen The Dark Crystal, you can read this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it won't spoil the ending as much. You know, it's like if you've already seen The Dark Crystal, then you know what's going to happen. And now you're like, ooh, I want to see how it happens.
Right.
If you haven't seen The Dark Crystal, then you don't know what's going to happen. So you've got something coming.
And according to the wiki, The Legends of the Dark Crystal takes place between, this is not this book, but The Legends of the Dark Crystal put out by Tokyo Pop, takes place between the splitting of the Xerxes and the Gelfling extermination. So even this predates that as far as a continuity of story goes. Matthew, thoughts on this?
I would say if you're a fan of the movie, it's a must-have. If you're a fan of mythology like Rodrigo, it's definitely something you should seek out. If you're just a schmuck like me and you like comic books and you like, you know, well-done story and you like a well-done picture, this is something you definitely want to look into. I think that it could be off-putting to people who expect, you know, big, quick kind of woohoo.
Yeah, but it's
a deeper story.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a story it's worth getting in depth with. It's a story that it's worth, because I went in going, oh, God, I'm going to spend another 2 hours. You know, not necessarily to that snotty level, because, again, you know, we don't really hate each other.
Yeah, I'm going to have to talk to Rodrigo and Steven.
These guys.
But so, I really liked it. I found myself really drawn into Agra. I would say it's definitely a read.
Good.
If you're a fan of the movie or a mythology fan, it's definitely a must-have.
So who's the narrator, do you think? Who's the mysterious cloaked person? Hazard a guess, Rodrigo?
It's probably.
My guess is it's going to be Jin, who's the protagonist.
That's who I was going to say, Jen.
I was going to say Kira.
It could be
the girl.
Yeah,
it could be Kira. Well, who's the one that ended up with Agra's little pet furball that runs around?
I think Kira had the furball.
Okay, then it's either Kira or Jin.
Yeah, you're right, because the furball's there. So.
Yeah. It's either Kira or Jin.
Yeah.
So, and it takes place generations after the end of The Dark Crystal. So it'll be a great tie back to that. Good. All right, everybody, that wraps it up for this week's show.
Brought back to life. Mm-hmm. Kira was brought back to life at the end of the movie, which I think could have made her immortal, like Captain Jack Sparrow or Captain Jack Harkness. Same guy. They're the same guy. Which, you know, at that point, that's why I thought it was Kira, was because, you know, the Ur-Skeksis brought her back from the dead.
Yeah. There you go.
And forgot to have her ever go be dead again.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in this week and being part of the Major Spoilers experience. Be sure to head over to MajorSpoilers.com, throw in your comments and thoughts about this week's show. And next week, something we rarely do. Well, it's not really manga.
We're not going to fight and talk over each other.
Well, shut up, you. Usagi Yojimbo, Circles is the book, book 6 in that series. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers and on MySpace at myspace.com/majorspoilers.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. fights like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun bee in the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major spoilers. It's copyright 2012.
My Paul Harvey turned into a John Wayne.
Yeah, you are neither Paul Harvey nor the new Andy Rooney. So give it up.
I am the new Andy Rooney.
No, because
don't
this is
you
Andy
hate
Rooney.
It when you're taking a leak and your fork stream.
No, because you missed a perfect opportunity on the pants thing. Let's take a moment to say goodbye to all the pants that we lost in 2012. And then you said something about khakis, we're going to miss you. And then you should have followed it up with corduroy, blue jeans, slacks, those one kind of funny pants that have the flare at the bottom.
I'm not trying to kill the joke. I'm just
pajama
trying to
jeans. That's what Andy Rooney would do. He would have a whole like minute and a half of nothing but just saying names of things. Pajama jeans.
My favorite Andy Rooney is Beavis doing an impersonation of Andy Rooney while paraphrasing George Carlin. Do you remember that? Have you ever noticed that you don't take a crap, you leave one? It was quite possibly the crowning moment of funny for Beavis and Butthead right there.
Okay.
And that's on. Saying something, because Beavis and Butthead was fucking funny. Remember the one where they forgot how to pee?
Yeah. That was a good one. TP for my butt hole.
Shut up, Steven. It's the old hole.
Hey, you talking to me? Are you talking to me? I am Coronio. It's time to start the podcast.
I should leave that in as well.
And the sad part is that's 80% of our input right there. That's how this show goes. That's why it's popular.
You people are listening like to how Steven the sausage is made.
And Stuart, don't forget Stuart over there in the corner in his winger t-shirt going, hey, cool guys.
Stuart, your mom sucks. My balls.
It's always fun when we can both team up and victimize Rodrigo, isn't it?
I've told you, it's pretty clear that Steven is Beavis, Matthew's Butthead, and I'm Daria.
I'm serious, this is all going in the show.
It totally should, because that's funny. Oh, and the best part is, when Rodrigo gets his own spinoff, he's going to have to get a new best friend.
Yeah.
Maybe Rob can play him. Rob can be Jane.
All right, let's go.
All right. I'm going to use my cough switch at all tonight.
Good.
Eagle One.
You have to actually turn the cough switch on before you cough.
Oh, I thought it was a switch that I push when I need to cough. I just push it and then I start coughing. It's funny because it's true.